1999. At this time, because we do not have a full committee here, we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 12. Brad, tell us where we are. I understand we have a problem with some amendments, but we're going to proceed on at least what we do know.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. Have dash five amendments that are essentially what the work group that you assigned to draft amendments had in mind. There are three or four minor clarifications to be made, and those should be ready by Monday so that we can. And I think what we'll do at this point, the work group met on six different statistics, different occasions, 13 hours, and quite a bit of consideration went into the amendment.
Okay, and while they're coming up, I want to thank everyone who put in this great work, and it is. I mean, you can take a look at it. A lot of indication of time being spent. You folks know the number. Speak your name for the record, and I'll let you decide who's going to go first.
Chair George, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. I'm here today in my capacity as chair of the work group that you folks appointed on Senate Bill 12. We met, we had, I think, a real good work group and came up with a pretty good product. We met a number of times. I'm trying to count the number of times. I can't remember, but there were a number of meetings that resulted in some significant amendments to the bill as currently, or from the way it currently looks. What I thought we'd do is Charlie Stone, to my left from the Department of Forestry, drafted, was kind enough to be the drafter for us and drafted all of the amendments. And believe me, we went through a number of amendments. I think Charlie was pretty busy. So what I thought I'd do is just turn it over to Charlie to talk about the amendments, and I'll add anything that I'll add in as we go. We'll just let Charlie take over.
Excuse us. We're working. We have people that are in need to leave, and we have a work session we need to accomplish. So, Charlie, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I am Charlie Stone, for the record, Assistant State Forester. And if it pleases the chair, I was planning to go through this in generalities in terms of the what we tackled rather than a section-by-section description of the amendments. Certainly, if you'd like to interrupt me at any point and go to specifics, we'll deal with that. Generally, the original Senate Bill 12 dealt in some fashion with virtually all landslides and all the adverse effects. What we've turned out as a product with the dash five amendments now, except for a few statements about existing conditions, deals only with the rapidly moving type of landslides and their threat of injury to or bodily injury to people and or potential death. The bill is now clear that the regulation that is incorporated within the bill deals only with those subjects of safety and only with rapid landslides. And that regulatory authority lies in two places, with the local governments in terms of siting and development standards for homes, and with the Board of Forestry in terms of forestry operations and their potential effects on landslides and where there is a risk to people down below. The earlier bill had some requirements for the DCBS. They're no longer in the bill at all, and had some other requirements for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Their role in the bill now has changed to one of assistance to the local governments in accomplishing the requirements that are placed on the local governments. The regulation will be applied to specific areas that are determined after closer review of actual evidence of the hazard. So that we talk about mapping, and geology and forestry are to do some mapping under the bill, and what we're calling those further review areas. But it's clear that that's what they mean, that you then have to look closer before a regulation is applied to determine that, in fact, you know, you may map an area that where landslides initiate and where the debris flows eventually run out. And that's kind of a broad mapping scale, but then you have to go and look and actually say, would a landslide likely begin here? Would a landslide actually, or have past flows actually flown, come down through here? And those are the areas that the local government will regulate for siting of homes, and those are the sites that the forestry would apply additional regulations to where they're appropriate. The bill intends to establish a comprehensive legislative policy for rapidly moving landslides and the public safety aspects that we talked about. And as such, there's a statement in there that that this bill and those policies and provisions will be controlling for any other rulemaking authority that that may exist and that attempts to deal with those specific subject areas. The local government's regulation authority, I think I may have mentioned this, but is lined out as the ability to set siting or development standards,
siting standards.
Okay, and or mitigation. It does not specifically allow for prohibition of homes on site, but then it doesn't say what the limits of those mitigation standards. It, you know, it may turn out that the landowner would determine that they're cost prohibitive, but it's the landowner's ultimate choice to meet those mitigation standards. And if they choose to do that and go forward and get a building permit, then they must also sign a statement acknowledging that they are in a high-risk area and that they will not take legal action against an adjacent landowner if there's a rapidly moving landslide. And that would be filed with the county clerk so that it would be discoverable in a future land transaction. The forestry regulation requirements require the board to evaluate actual risk. And as I mentioned before, deal strictly with slides that are related to forest operations. I think we testified before the committee before that some types of landslides that we see in Oregon, the slower moving types, the large rotational blocks, generally are not affected by forestry operations. They're a different mechanism, and the board would not be dealing with those types. They're restricted in this to the rapidly moving landslides that are related to forest operations. Furthermore, and I may be jumping around a little bit, but when someone has determined that they are going to build a home and they meet the county's mitigation and siting standards, then new homes under those provisions after the effective date of this act would not trigger the new forestry regulations for folks above. So it's you can't one landowner isn't transferring a burden to another. So that's hope that the language that we put in there accomplishes those were the work group's intent in that. There's an element in here, I stray a little bit from Senate Bill 12. Senate Bill 13 came along with this in kind of the same package from the Landslide Task Force and dealt with disclosure statements. By and large, the elements that were in that Senate Bill 13 that actually did deal with landslides for the most part already exist in the disclosure statement. There were some new things that dealt with earthquakes and a few other that really weren't directly related to the bill. The one piece that it did deal with was specific to geotechnical reports and making those available or recognize those. In Senate Bill 12 now, we say that the county will keep records of properties or sites that have had geotechnical reports required on them. So that, again, someone who wants to find out about those geotechnical reports can go to the county, determine that those have been done, presumably be able to access those geotechnical reports. And with that, it was the work group's feeling then that Senate Bill 13 was no longer necessary. The one piece that was missing was incorporated into Senate Bill 12. There was a new piece in the Dash 5 amendments that was not the product of the work group. Senator George provided a section that that calls for transferable development rights. I suppose I should get the permission of the chair again, because now I'm not speaking for the work group, but testifying on behalf of the Department of Forestry. Because that was new, we just saw that today. I guess I'd say first that certainly we were, we participated in the work group. We were okay with the work group product as it was presented to the Legislative Council and now to the committee. We just saw the TDRs, the transferable development rights today, and generally have some concerns about those. I understand some of that's going to be addressed, or presumably is going to be addressed. Things like, well, first of all, the Forestry Department is probably on record in plenty of places that more homes in the forest is a concern in terms of the land base, generally. More specifically, we want to make sure that if these provisions go forward, that it's clear that only a right to develop that already exists is transferable to another location, that it doesn't create a right where one doesn't exist currently on property, and it may be clear. It's a subtle point in the language as I read it. The other that transferable development right only rises when the county has restricted or mitigated due to landslides. As it reads right now, it says in the further review area, and there could be plenty of places that they could build in the further review area, which should not generate a transferable development right, in our view. It was pointed out to me after a first concern, but I think I want to raise it anyway, that we want to make sure that the provisions that we've worked hard over the several years to develop to protect the forest-urban interface and you know, development standards that require water supplies, wide enough roads, access for firefighting equipment, those types of things, would still be applied to any properties that might be developed as a result of this. And then I guess I'd make the general statement that we're still not sure that, you know, we've ferreted everything out, and so we're not here to support the transferable development rights. We do support the bill as it was prepared by the work group.
As you understand it, are the transferable development rights saleable?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Our Chair George introduced, I believe, the point, and maybe we should let the Chair speak to his amendments, but I have, after reading the letter that we received from Senator George and looking at the amendments, I believe the point is that the person who lives within the debris flow path would essentially take their right to develop on that piece of property, and in exchange for putting a deed restriction on that piece of property saying nothing will ever be built here, would then transfer, have the ability to take that right, put it onto another piece of property within the same zone, or either sell it to a third party or take it on another piece of property that they own within the same zone and place the structure there.
If you had a large enough parcel of property and they had determined that this is what we're going to build and we're moving forward with it, is determined during that process that there was a quickly moving landslide and they couldn't build there, and they decided that they weren't interested in building on the rest of the property, they could sell the property and sell the development right to someone else.
Chair George, Senator Duke, in exchange for having the right to transfer that development right, there would have to be a restriction placed upon the property that's within the hazard area, saying that there will never be any building ever.
But if they had, if it was a bigger piece of property and they just didn't want to build in another location on that, it doesn't stop somebody else from doing it.
Chair George, Senator Duke, the restriction would apply to the entire parcel, and the only time that the transfer, we talked about it, portions of the work group met at 3 o'clock today. Some folks went there, some folks came. We talked about amendments that would make it clear that you would only get the transferable development right if the county decided to impose some type, local government, city or county, this applies within cities as well, if the local government decided to impose some type of mitigation measures. So if there was a separate part of the property that wasn't inside the debris flow area, and the county decided, or the local government said, you can site over there and we won't impose any mitigation measures, then the TDR wouldn't arise.
Do other restrictions apply? For example, there are a lot of pieces of forest land that you can't build on. There are some that need to test, and you can. If you have one of those that you can, and then they tell you you can't because of a landslide area, can you transfer your building right onto only another parcel where it's allowable for you to build a home, or can you just transfer it onto another piece of forest land?
George, Senator Dukes, as I read the bill, you would
same zoning designation.
Yeah, you would transfer to another piece of forest property that otherwise would not qualify. If there wouldn't be any market for the transferable development right, if the other piece of property already qualified, so you would transfer it to another piece of property that didn't otherwise qualify, subject to all of the siting standards in Chapter 215, 215-130. Which would be fuel break area, access to roads, sewer, water, fire protection, all of the siting standards that currently exist in the forest zone for a house in the forest. And if you're talking about a city lot, then obviously those siting standards would apply. There'd be whatever siting standards the city has.
Let me clarify something, too, before we go ahead. If you look on page 5, lines 11, 12, and 13, it deals with, has to be within the same zone. Also, because of the fact we had a drafting error and it does need to go back to LC, we took the information that was agreed upon this afternoon, amendments to the amendments type thing, and since we have to go back in for corrections, we are adding those to it. So when it comes back to
it's in the same zone, doesn't have to be a lot that in and of itself you would be able to build a home on. I said some forest land can't be built on, some egg land can't be built on.
Right.
But this would allow you to build on one of those parcels.
And that would be reasonable because you're going to have a significant exceeding of the value of your property because you had a buildable piece of forest land you can't build on, so you'd go look probably for some place that didn't have that to be able to have an equal value.
Does it have to be in the same city or county?
As I read the amendment, Senator Deuce, no, it'd have to be in the same zone, but it doesn't have to be within the same. We didn't put there isn't a geographic limitation.
Okay, so if somebody wanted to build a home in, I don't know where, Prineville, and they couldn't do it, they could, how long can you hang on to this transferable right?
Chair George, Senator Deuce, I don't see that there's a limitation there, provided that I believe it's clear from, as I read the dash, or Section 5, that once you transfer those rights, you place the deed restriction upon your specific parcel.
So they could either build a home somewhere nearby that wasn't, that they normally would have been able to build on and all of that, and hang on to that transferable right, and 10 years later build a vacation home in the woods in Clatsop County, or they could build their home where they want, on another piece of land, buildable land, and sell it to somebody to build a vacation home on the edge of the Tillamook Forest.
Karen George, Senator Dukes, I believe if they had the right to build on a separate piece of property, then essentially they would have, in order to get the TDR, they would have two lots upon which they could build a site, a dwelling. One of those lots would then become unavailable for the siting of a dwelling because of the fact that it's within a high hazard area. That would then, if there were mitigation measures imposed by the county or the city, if a city lot, would trigger the ability to transfer those rights at some point.
Hang on to it for 10 years and go build a vacation home some day in the future.
Chair George, Senator Dukes, that's correct.
Single family dwelling as well,
right.
Yeah, on line 17. Okay, it's going to be better, I think, to have a discussion of this than when we have actually what's going to be the amendments before. if there's nothing further, I'm going to go ahead and...
Senator George, would it be appropriate to, or do you need to list out the things that are that we found in the dash five that need to be changed, or is that not necessary to put that on the record?
At this point, we're kind of locked in. It is what it is. Tell me what you think. You're the one that said it. All right, let's go ahead.
Okay. Very quickly then, on page 3 of the dash 5 amendments, at the bottom of the page, there's a portion of the bill that the work group intended that, as I stated, when a new home is allowed under these provisions and the hold harmless and all that are created, then the intention of the work group was that the Forestry Department would not be able to regulate differently, because of the risk of serious injury or death. But as it was drafted, it says need not there, and so that was, that left more discretion to the department and the board, and I think the intent of the work group was to tighten that back down to shall not, or that option isn't there.
Okay.
On page 7, under the existing statute 215.130, the nonconforming use statute, if a home is destroyed by fire, casualty, other natural disaster, the statute allowed it to be rebuilt even if it was in a non-conforming use zone. The intention of the work group here was that for whatever reason it was destroyed, before it could be rebuilt, it would have to, if it was in a rapidly moving debris flow type area, then it would have to meet the county standards. And it was drafted it's only if it was destroyed by rapidly moving landslides. So we proposed to change delete due to a rapidly moving landslide, and so instead under this subsection, so it referred back to all of the potential casualties there. On page 9, on line 12, there's just a typo in the reference to the statute and section that gives the Board of Forestry its rulemaking authority under this bill. That should say ORS 527.710 sub 11.
11, okay.
On page 13, under that ORS 527.710 sub 11, two things. One, we found an inconsistency in the language. In throughout the bill, we've been dealing with the risk of serious injury or death, here it said personal injury. And it caused us to realize that maybe we needed to clarify that throughout the bill, because injury in legal terms probably means any kind of harm or damage. And so I think we would have LC go back to the bill, and wherever it says serious injury, say serious bodily injury, to clarify what our intention was. The other item, and I don't know if this is important or not, but consistent with what the full work group had said before, in line 12, we have deleted references throughout the bill to public safety and spoken to the risk of serious bodily injury or death. So we might delete that term safety, although it may also be helpful in describing which risks we're talking about above. I'm not sure what we decided on that, but that was something that I personally think safety can be in there and not to harm things, but it was being faithful to the intentions of the work group. And I think those are the... Were there any, Brad, did I capture all the pieces that we were going to talk about, other than the TDR section?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that's it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks again to the group that spent so much good work preparing this for us. Really appreciate that. And again, to clarify, the reason that I asked for these additions to this is from the very beginning, I said, and it was the will of this committee, I think it was clear to everyone on the record, that this bill would be fair to everyone, that this was not going to end up with somebody being on the disadvantage end. Before I close this, Peter Green wants to come.
Welcome this evening. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's an honor to be before you. I will try to be brief. I understand you need to go into work session. I do want to first applaud all of you and many people in the audience for the progress that has been made since the tragic November 18th, 1996 landslide that took five lives in South Central Oregon. The work of the 1997 legislature, like to recognize particularly Senator Kincaid's work in putting together Senate Bill 1211 and Dale Ackerman's work in during the interim and putting together a lot of the ideas that are contained in this bill. And in particular, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank you for putting this into a work group environment. I think it was very productive, and I appreciate having a member, a representative from the governor's office present at each of those meetings. Senate Bill 12 will accomplish many things that are very important for Oregon, for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. It's very important that we recognize the need to develop maps and have those as the tools we need to make important and correct decisions as far as how landowners, both upslope and downslope, may use the land. This bill does provide the resources for Dalgami to gather information and to do the important mapping that must take place in order for us to be educated about the risks that we face. As you know, this bill really depends on the concept of shared responsibility, something we've been talking about now for over 2 years. On one side, the Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry have recognized the responsibility of upslope landowners, particularly forest landowners. As a follow-up to Senate Bill 1211, they'll affirm the need of the Board of Forestry and their role to protect public safety through the development of appropriate and reasonable guidelines on timber harvest operations. I do remind the committee that we now have a temporary moratorium in place on many operations in the forest, and they've had a burden on them for the last 2 years, or over 2 years now. The Department of Forestry has already begun to map potential landslide areas on timberlands and will continue to do so. On the other side of the coin, local governments also share this responsibility. This bill provides local governments with a framework, a brief outline, if you will, of steps that should be taken for dealing with these rapidly moving landslides and the risks that they pose. Local governments are empowered to require site-specific geotechnical reviews on sites identified by Dalgami in the bill. They are also empowered to regulate development on high-risk sites through mitigation measures and site development standards, and they are required to maintain a list of those properties for which geotechnical reports have been developed. Having said that, we support the bill for the most part, but we're concerned about its, although it calls for the potential for the department to prohibit timber harvest, outright prohibit certain types of timber harvest in areas, the provision that would have allowed for local governments to say there are areas on the landscape where homes ought not to be built has been removed, as you're aware from the bill. Section 4, subsection 6, which essentially states that any rule or ordinance passed by a local or state agency which contains more restrictive criteria regulating activities on lands covered by the Act shall be deemed not in conformance with this Act. The result is that that tool is removed from the toolbox from local governments. Essentially, we believe that it would prematurely eliminate the flexibility of local governments and state agencies which are charged with protecting public health, safety, and welfare. It would prohibit them from tailoring their response to meet the site-specific facts of a rapidly moving landslide hazard. We'd anticipate, of course, this would be used only in the rarest of circumstances where mitigation or other site approval requirements were not working. I understand this was being considered in the work group up until the final meeting and that in the work group, the governor's office representative did object to that. We believe that local governments and state agencies must be allowed at least the flexibility to do their job based on the specific facts available to them. And also, a lot of the issues have already been covered on the transfer of development rights by Charlie and by Senator Dukes as well. We do support the concept of transferable development rights in general. We're concerned that the way this language is crafted and it being so new to the committee that there are a number of details that haven't been hammered out, which Senator Dukes did quite a good job of bringing to the committee's attention the potential downstream ramifications, so to speak, for this, such as who is eligible for this, is it any landowner that has any portion of the land affected? The previous witness suggested, well, it's only if a home has been denied, but of course we've seen the bill, there is no opportunity to deny a home, it's only through mitigation, so how much mitigation requirement would actually trigger the ability to get a transferable development right. The question was also brought up, does it carry the zoning from this site in this forest site to zoning in the other forest site? It sounded as though it would essentially allow more homes in the forest in an area where that local government may have determined they don't want any more homes to be built. Another potential risk would be if someone actually had a large parcel but had several stream gullies in there, if they made a proposal to build a home in one, were granted a TDR because they were denied it, essentially could they then sell that TDR and then they still have other stream gullies that they could potentially propose other homes in and have some sort of ongoing ability to get these. I think we do support, Mr. Chairman, the idea of transferable development rights. I'm just simply pointing this out because I think there are some details that need to be worked out to make this workable. And that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Green, I have a question for you, and that is in Natural Resources, Ways and Means, here in the Dagami budget, was there any provision for additional Dagami people to work on this? My understanding was the only person was directed to the coast, and I think I have a letter from the governor indicating that the coastal was a priority over this issue.
The letter, well, I don't believe, although I think the Dagami representative is here, and Senator Ferrioli perhaps could address this directly, I don't believe there was additional money in the Dagami budget that went through earlier this week to cover all that was envisioned in this bill. I don't know. Dennis is here somewhere. Is that true, Dennis?
That's correct.
All right, apparently that's correct. Sure. Why doesn't? Are you familiar enough with Dennis to talk about this a little bit?
Dennis, could you please come up?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dennis Olmstead with the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. I believe the question was whether or not the fiscal impact for this bill was included in our budget as it appeared before the Ways and Means Subcommittee. And the answer to that is no. There was no funding in our budget as it appeared before the subcommittee to cover the work that we would anticipate under Senate Bill 12.
Okay. All right. We need to hurry.
My original note said that the estimate was $200,000 for Dogami.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, the estimate was $247,000 for one biennium, and that would be for two FTEs.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 12, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1152. Oh, that's correct. I'm sorry about that. Yes, John, if you wouldn't mind, I'll go ahead and open the public hearing back up so we can hear from you on 12. But not right now. And I'd already opened that public hearing. Isn't that what I just said? Okay.
I can
predict. All right. Capital work session. Senate Bill 1152. Brad, tell us where we are on this one.
Chair, members of the committee, establishes the right to carry out small-scale recreational mining operations, impose a civil penalty for interference minus $10,000. We heard this bill on April 26th, and at that point, the parties, those parties being already independent miners, local mining associations, and various state agencies, were going to try and work out the compromise amendment for the people of everybody. My understanding is that that's three amendments that are almost there, but not quite. We do. We have joint elements for the Oregon Independent Mining Commission forward and talk to that. Yeah. No, I believe Lori Allman.
Identify yourself for the record, and I'll let you on the three of you decide who's going to go first.
Chairman George, committee, my name is John Holloman. I am the executive director of Oregon Independent Miners. After some long negotiations, we finally come up with some things that are really close, but as Brad had suggested that we want to keep this process moving, so we'll finish the process over on the House side. Basically, what we have is a drop of subsection 2, number 2, and section 3 will be dropped except for any rule pertaining to recreational small-scale mining adopted under the effective date of this 1999 Act shall be done in consultation with affected parties. And that's basically the only changes that we see going over to the house side. And I can say for Oregon Independent Miners, we're happy with where we're at right now.
Senator Duke.
So Section 3, the language that you stated, would be the only thing left in Section 3?
Yes. We are in a work session. Dash 3.
Mr. Chairman, move Dash 3 to 1152.
Yes, we're moving Dash 3 with the assumption that changes will occur on the House. I just wanted everybody to be informed of what we would expect back before you vote.
Don't we amend the Dash 3? If all they're doing is taking on all of Section 2 and all of Section 3 except for and 15, 16, 17, and the end of 14.
Chairman George, I'm going to let you, is everybody comfortable with doing that at this point, or was
it? It's not the whole section, sir. It's only subsection.
Subsection. Yeah. Why is it the whole little piece? We only get in trouble when we start taking out words and putting in new words. And we take out a whole.
I'm happy. I just want to get the thing going. I thought that the deal was that we were going to let them clean it up over there, but if we can clean it up here, Senator Duke, let's do her and get it done. That's fine.
I'm really uncomfortable through the way it's written, mm-hmm. but I'm fine with it the way with what he's talking about.
Back to where we are, and then we'll see if that's agreeable. Describe where we are on the page.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that we would remove
Mr. Chair, what's so offensive about this section? The miners want a bill. I say, what's so offensive about it? Why don't they agree?
Mr. Chair, I think some of the problem here has to do with fish. And some of these mining operations, the small-scale ones, are often done in streams and rivers. And this language could easily be construed that you can't enforce things like the Oregon Plan. There happens to be a small-scale mining operation there. But with the way they're fixing it, we can do both.
Senator Corcoran, are you ready to go ahead?
Yes, move the amendments as amended.
As amended, yes. All of Section 3?
No.
No?
No.
Chairman George, line 14, where it starts with any, the very last word of the line 14,
right.
Through line 17, would remain.
Would remain.
Would remain.
So then, 14, up through rules, then all of the sections 3, 9, 18 through 21, is that correct?
Yes.
Capitalize A on any? Okay. Cool. Are you happy with that? Senator, does that fit your...
Yep.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get along today.
All right. Without objection?
Move 1152 as amended. The floor is due pass.
Senator Corcoran has moved Senate Bill 1152 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. All right. Senate Bill 1152 is declared passed and will be sent to the floor with a due pass. And who would like to carry that? You?
Either me or Senator Corcoran, Your Honor. Whichever you prefer.
Fine. Senator Perry, always fine.
Did you?
What is wrong here today? There's too much agreement. Senator Perry only will carry Senate Bill 1152.
Mr. Holloman just cares that we get
the same bill. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 1152.
And what do you think?
That's 964. Yeah, we're going to lose. Okay, I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 964.
Members of the committee, Senate Bill 964 designates calcium hypochlorite as hazardous waste and prohibits declassifying calcium hypochlorite as hazardous waste. Includes generator of calcium hypochlorite from conditional and after we met last
on
the party indicated that there might be some way to
that was, in my understanding, would provide Metro the authority to regulate the disposal of fluoride within the
Okay. Where are you? Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ray Phelps. With me is Terry Peterson, the acting director of Salt Lake. So you can recall our last time we were here, we were talking about this issue and its impact on the safety and the health of both the public and our employees. In short, statement is after meeting with DEQ and after talking with the Logging Association and a number of other organizations, we have concluded that, and they have accepted that this is the most reasonable way to deal with the issue to protect our public and our employees. So I'll be glad to answer questions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Senator Wilde, would you like to deal with the bill?
Yes. Dash to amendment to SB 964.
Senator Wilde has moved the dash to amendments to Senate Bill 964 without objection. Senator DeDuke, you want to hold for a second?
I just have a question.
Okay.
I'm slow tonight. Does this mean it's not going to be hazardous waste? I'm going to take a wild guess and assume that they may not be the only ones using whatever the heck this is. What?
Oh, where was that? You
they meaning pool or?
They meaning Metro.
Oh, that's being a problem. You want this statewide?
Well, I don't know. We just go from it's hazardous waste to it's not hazardous waste, but one jurisdiction within the state has to write rules.
Mm-hmm.
What about everybody else?
They didn't ask for that.
Okay. Never mind.
We have four.
Okay. Rule writing.
I was wondering about that.
No, it just didn't. Fall under
don't have that authority.
It's not going to be hazardous
anymore. Besides getting around the hazardous substance requirement. Full process of this particular chemical. So we're achieving the thing without necessarily designating it hazardous.
Your word for it. It just seems to me that Metro has plenty of rulemaking authority and to say about one jurisdiction.
Okay.
We need to clarify this. We come on back.
Okay.
You can just move it. I'll quit asking questions.
No, that's all right. Let's get this on the record because there's been a discussion here. We need to build a record here that we all understand what we're doing.
My name is Ray Phelps representing Metro, and I totally agree with the representations made by Senator Wilde.
Boy, that's one for the record right there. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Yes,
and you did move the dash two.
I did.
He did. And is the objection
still
pending objection? Senator Dukes, are you okay?
Oh, you're okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move SB 964 as amendment 64 with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Wilde has moved Senate Bill 964 as amended before with a due pass. Is there any further comments or questions? If not, we'll call the roll.
Senator Dukes?
Aye.
Commissioner?
Aye.
Senator Wilde?
Aye.
Senator
Dukes? Aye.
Senate Bill 964 passed at the floor with a due pass, and Senator Wilde, would you carry this bill for
us? I think I should.
You need to understand that. Very cool. All right. I'm going to go ahead and, at this point, and close the work session on Senate Bill 964. And thank you. Oh, yes, we better do that. Okay. All right, why don't you go ahead and deal with that? I'm going to reopen the work session on Senate Bill 1152 for the clarification of the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we needed to clarify one matter on a...
Okay. That was Bill. All right. I'm going to close the work session up a little bit ahead of the statement. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1152. And any suggestion? Let's deal with Senator Yee's bill. I'm going to open the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 13.
We would do it on a day she's not here.
She would be very happy.
Amend it and really surprise her.
Members of the committee.
$1 million
to continue cooperative work between state and federal agencies in controlling deep population. That was in the last
there's a request of $14 million to increase forest opportunities for youth in areas where the farm land, such as coastal,
submitted dash amendments that would change
the $1 million expenditure and would request that the United States Department of Agriculture contracts with area growers to purchase growing crops to feed the Canada geese in Oregon and Washington. That's here to date.
Pete, go ahead and come on up, Pete. I'm just quickly looking. Line 16.
Chairman George, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to comment a bit on these amendments. We thought it might be clear, and although there's probably limited hope of getting $14 million from the federal government on this, but if we had a plan that sounded halfway interesting, maybe somebody would bite. And the thought that, and this is from one of the hunters, believe me, at the last week, that said, well, if they won't pay compensation, why don't we figure a way to buy the feed? But it's pretty hard to buy it growing in the field, but we could set up a kind of purchase insurance policy, have the area farmers sign up for whatever they're going to pay, and then if their field gets eaten, they get a payment. If they don't, they don't get a payment. And it was just perfect, and why a hot idea, and if they really came with the money, maybe we could actually do something. So we thought we'd put it in as a teaser to see if it got any interest along with the money that we need for the program, the $100 million needs program family.
Senator Duke?
Pete, can we do both?
Yeah,
in my area, we've got the refuges and need to be able to feed them. I mean, it's hard enough convincing ODFW that we need to use the entire refuge, but then we got to pay for the seed. So if we could do both,
I believe we could with this bill, Senator. If they gave us the money, I'd be so excited we'd do a bunch of things from the day. So that would be interesting since they don't pay compensation. So that's what we thought with those amendments might be a little better than before.
Could be
taken
to be a
meter, although that 14 million fund, yeah, it would.
I think we could
put an and at the end of 19.
That's what I was thinking.
And feed refuges in other areas or something.
Yeah.
So in here for the sanctuary, because it's pretty amazing we owned all that land. What was it, 15,000 acres of fed zone? But they don't have any money to plant these things, so they come over and eat off the farmers.
I think an and is and feed refuges and sanctuaries, and feed refuges and sanctuaries. And
Senator Dukes, are you figuring out a way to make that work?
Yeah. If you just take out the $14 million on your thing, you've got to fund a program in which the United States, I mean, I assume you like all that language. Okay.
That probably would be good.
Yeah. So it would become what is line four of the dash one, but you take out $14 million and turn the B to a C.
Line four, $14
million. So that it would just read and to fund a program in which the United States Department of Agriculture.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Because you've already got an A and a B.
No, 14 million comes up. 14 and it stays in B, right?
Yeah,
so it reads B. Then it comes down.
Yeah.
Sanctuary refuges and fund a program in which the United States Government Department.
Okay.
Pete, we're going to get in trouble for this.
Yeah, it's happened before.
That's right. We can take the heat, no problem. As long as I get my committee to stick their heads in the news, too, we're going to be fine.
Why are we including Morrison?
They are part of the regular $1 million program, right, where we do the hunting and stuff.
Well, they don't mind being included.
Especially not if we get money.
Senator Gordon is pretty key in the committees that have that money, so.
Right. That was my thought, Steve. Okay. We're in a work session.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Duke?
I'll move that we amend the dash one amendment to SAM 13 by, on line four, change the B to a C and strike $14 million. And strike line three.
Yep. Okay.
Yes. Oh, you don't have to. The capital is true. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
And was
yeah,
and before B.
I haven't got there yet. Well, I guess maybe I should. And put an and in the line at the end of line 19. And strike the period. I guess we'll listen to this record someday.
Fund April.
Right, and then.
Is it fund or two funds? And. Well, and. Fund.
The President and Congress of the United States are respectfully urged to appropriate these things and to fund.
Two funds.
Mm-hmm.
Or not two.
Yeah.
end of that thing. And that's how you finish that. Okay?
All right. Okay. I'm with you.
Okay.
All right.
So it's simple. That's fine. Wait, what's that?
And to appropriate, which is already in there, funds for a program in which the
funds for a program in which the United States government will contract with GARS. That sounds good.
To appropriate.
Well, to appropriate is up earlier. It's in line 15. So you're just.
A program.
Okay. Yeah,
that's
good. Oh, he's in. Okay.
Here we go.
We've got the dash one, the SJM 13. We're going to delete line 3. And on line 4, the B becomes a C, and we strike $14 million to, and the F on fund becomes a capital, and it becomes funds. We insert the word for, and the rest of the paragraph stays the same. And we add on line 19, we delete the period, insert the word and a semicolon.
And?
Before the and. Okay. Okay, and insert the word and. That's my motion. Right, the dash ones will go in on line 20.
Okay. I think we all understand that.
Yep.
Long as it happens. Okay. So, yeah, you were moving that without objection. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Senate Joint Memorial 13 as amended to the full of the DuPass recommendation.
Senator Dukes has moved Senate Joint Memorial 13 as amended to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Right. I would move the dash one amendment to SJM 13, isn't it?
Hang on. Yes, we're going to reach. We're going to retract my.
Anyway.
Okay. We just remove that. Okay. Now we're back because
right.
you before you're right. What we did with the tap of the gavel was adapt the amendments to dash one.
Yeah.
Now we need to do dash one.
So I'll move the amended dash one amendment to SJM 13
without objection.
Thank now you. I'll move SJM 13 as amended to the floor with a DuPass recommendation.
Senator Duke just moved Senate Joint Memorial 13 as amended to the floor with a DuPass. Is there any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. The bill is passed. We will, of course, ask Senator Yee to carry that. Thank you all for the work on that. And I will close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 13. And we have one more to go. And I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 1151. Brad, tell us where we are on that one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1151 requires state the forestry to review of Oregon forest practices related to what we heard this bill. Earlier,
Are they in agreement? Would they like to nod their heads? We're going to lose our quorum here. Is everybody in agreement? Okay, come on forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just very quickly, my name is David Moorman. I'm the policy manager for the Forest Practices Program at the Department of Forestry. I do want to say we're very supportive of the efforts to restore rangeland through juniper removal, and we very much support the study that's described in Section 1 of the bill. With or without legislation, that study will go forth. The Board of Forestry received a very informative presentation by the juniper growers last week, and I think I can speak for the board in saying that they do support that study with or without legislation. And in fact, I think it's important to look at Section 1 and think and add not only in coordination with other state agencies, but we would very much want to include the landowner operator community in that study process. We do have concerns about Section 2. That was a section we did not agree with and cannot support, just not because we don't think it's a good concept. It may very well be a concept that would come out of the study itself, which is intended to look at issues such as tax policy as it affects juniper management. We think it's premature to make that as a prerequisite to the study and would rather have that be a recommendation that comes out of the study. It's important to recognize, too, that landowners already receive, or timber owners already receive, a 25,000 board foot exemption under the harvest tax law that if it's done in a way where the landowners rather than the operator list themselves as a timber owner, that can maximize their ability to minimize their tax under current system. So we would prefer that discussion of tax policy come out of the study rather than in this form, but we are very supportive of the language in Section 1.
Yes, let's do that.
For the record, my name is Ralph Hopp. I'm from Santa Falls. I'm representing the Western Juniper Ad Hoc Committee for the Commercialization of the Steering Committee for Commercialization of Juniper. We worked together on this thing following the session, I believe, on the 26th, and with some revision agreed pretty much on Section 1. We did want to include Section 2 because we do have a concern that it is a fairly strong disincentive for private landowners to restore their property. Juniper, rangeland restoration is a very marginal process at this point in time, especially for the private landowners. Over 60% of 2 million acres of juniper lands in eastern Oregon are in private ownership, and over 50% of those lands are in a degraded condition. So restoration is key on these rangelands to remove juniper, which is a weed tree. So we need all the incentives we can to accommodate or to help, especially the private landowner, and to get public lands also in a restored condition. So we're strongly interested in what Section 2 will do, especially in as much as it will speed up the process to get this question answered. I'm not sure if we can get each individual landowner to take this exemption or this tax exemption or not. Under the commercial process we've established so far in Southern Oregon, the harvester usually takes over the juniper ownership and runs it through his process. So whether we could slip it in under a private landowner exemption or not, I'm not sure. We are concerned about getting some of these questions answered as soon as possible, and that's why we are really interested in both Section 1 and Section 2 of Senate Bill 1151.
So you're telling us that you want Section 2 in the Senate.
We would like to see it remain in there unless State Forestry can come up with a review in a very timely manner and get this question answered, and we can.
Okay. Did have testimony that indicated that this would be an important part of making this thing work earlier.
Yes, and if it would kill the whole bill, we would, our committee, our group would support pulling that part out. But we do like to see it and then get some of these questions answered in a very timely manner. State Forestry has not talked about how soon they could answer, especially the questions brought up in Section 2 of Senate Bill 1151.
Well, is there any objection to this committee? We're going to work
section. Section 2 in the dash 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with leaving.
All right. Excuse me. Senator Wild has moved dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1151 without objection. So moved.
I will move SB 1151 as amendments to the Forest Commission.
Senator Wild has moved Senate Bill 1151 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Senate Bill 1151 is passed to the floor with a due pass. And who would like to carry this?
Okay.
I wouldn't want to carry this. Fisher, would you like to carry 1151?
Hmm.
It issued it.
I would sooner maybe that.
Oh, yeah.
Senator
Ferrioli.
Yep,
is exactly right. Senator Ferrioli has volunteered to carry this bill.
Yeah.
He understands it's in his district most.
That's correct.
He understands the issue a lot better. I'll certainly support it.
Okay. Very good. I'm going to go ahead now and close the work session on Senate Bill 1151. And is there any further business to come before this committee? Seeing none, we will be adjourned.